Good morning and welcome to the March 20, 2023 meeting of the Chelan Public Utilities Commission. Try saying that fast. That's a lot of 20s and 23s. At the moment, there are four commissioners present. Hopefully, Commissioner McKenna will join us a little bit later this afternoon by phone. And our normal staff are here, Manager Kirk Hudson, Clerk of the Board Rebecca Newman, and Legal Counsel Eric Walquist. I would ask everybody to check their electronic devices to make sure they're placed in the silent mode to assist in not disrupting today's meeting. We value public input at our meetings, and while I don't see a lot of public here, we will be providing an opportunity for the public to have input at the end of our morning session and at the end of our afternoon session. If you wish to speak, we ask that you provide your name and address for the record, as our meetings are recorded, and we wish to have an accurate record of your input. We additionally ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes. Additionally, if anybody wishes to speak to any of the agenda items, I will provide that opportunity at the end of each segment. Our flag salute and safety minute will be brought to us today by Ian Hunter, who I'm understanding knows dams pretty well.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ready for me? All right. Good morning. My name is Ian Hunter, and I'm a civil engineer that supports the dam safety engineering group here at Chelan PUD. Today I'm going to be talking about dam safety. Okay, so what is dam safety and why is it important? Dams are considered critical infrastructure, providing flood control, drinking and irrigation water, power generation, navigation, and recreation. Dam safety is considered the art and science of ensuring the integrity and viability of dams such they do not present unacceptable risk to the public, property, and the environment. So what does that mean? You know, how is that done? That's typically done through engineers that conduct dam safety performance and monitoring, engineering evaluations to ensure that the water retaining structures meet minimum acceptance criteria for safe operation. Now, there are over 90,000 dams in the U.S., and the majority of those are privately owned, operated, and maintained. The average age of these structures is over 61 years. The average age of our dams here at Chelan PUD is over 80. So sometimes it can be easy to get complacent when you have these massive, mobile concrete structures that have been placed for decades. You have aging infrastructure, climate change, operational influences, and sometimes competing objectives. And that's why dam safety is important, to ensure that we continue to maintain these structures in a way that keeps them safe and operational. And finally, the last reason why dam safety is important is it's a critical component of the district's safety value. So Chelan PUD's dam safety program. We have a very robust dam safety program that comprises of a team of engineers, dam operators, maintenance workers, and other technical support staff. The goal is to ensure that our hydroelectric projects continue to remain structurally stable and safe for continued operation. This is done by ongoing surveillance and monitoring activities, visual inspections, and a wide range of engineering studies. You'll see on the screen here, there's some monitoring data that we collect and we track for adverse trends. And on the photo on the right is a robotic instrument that continuously monitors Rock Island Dam. The dam safety team regularly reports and coordinates with the FERC's, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's Dam Safety Division. Another critical component of dam safety is emergency action planning, or EAPs. The district administers three unique emergency action plans, one for each of our hydroelectric projects. The EAPs are a formal document that identifies potential emergency conditions at a dam and specifies pre-planned actions to be followed in order to minimize property damage and loss of life. The EAPs describe actions to be taken in coordination with local emergency management authorities in the event of a dam safety incident or emergency. The photo on the screen is a photo from 2017 at a California dam, the Oroville project, in this case they had a unacceptable performance of their spillway, and as a result they had to evacuate 180,000 people downstream, and that's when they used their emergency action plan to safely evacuate those people. Now luckily this didn't result in a dam failure, but it was a very big issue that took a lot of years to remediate. And I'll just wrap this up to just point out, everybody mark your calendars, that May 31st is National Dam Safety Awareness Day. So, yeah, if you have any questions, let me know.
Commissioners, any questions? That is very fascinating.
Great report.
Yeah. Oroville Dam's the tallest dam in the country?
It's the tallest earth dam in the country. It might be the tallest overall, too. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a scary time down there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would just add Ian and Bill Christman and Dustin Fletcher was involved too, and Dustin's moved on to another job, but all three of them are doing work that if they're doing their job, we don't ever see. And I just appreciate their ability to keep track of. They're very proactive and staying on top of all the measurements and indicators that would make sure that we have a safe project in operation. And so appreciate the work Ian's doing and the rest of the dam safety team.
So you're saying you never want to hear from Ian?
I do want to hear. Exactly. In fact, I do want to hear from Ian. Anytime there's any concerns, I definitely want to hear. And actually, it was one of the things that I did when I started here 25 years ago was some of the work that they're doing. Okay. So have a big appreciation for it.
Right.
Are you doing a big event on the 31st?
Oh, yeah. It's a big party in my house.
Everybody invited?
I used to get like a damn small party smile from my wife, and that's about it. Well, my kids like it because, you know, they get to say damn safety.
Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thanks again.
CPO winner.
Yeah, so happy this morning to present our February Cycler Personal Ownership Award winners. And with us online is Danae DeRossi. And Danae was nominated from a department. Danae is in human resources and is our organizational development expert. And she was nominated by somebody outside of human resources for work she did. And actually the person that nominated her because of something that she accomplished that hasn't been done here before. And that is that there was a desire to have all of our training requirements in one place where a manager could see whether their employees were on track and whether they were registered for all the mandatory training. And you might recall just from some of your experience, we've had training in multiple systems and three different systems that I know of. And Danae was able to put all that in one place. So the manager then could have a dashboard and actually see all their employees and see where they were at on their training and whether the training was appropriate and was being done on the schedule that it was supposed to be done. So big kudos to Danae, and actually she used the system that's fairly new to us, just a few years old. And so it's great to see something actually put into operation that we've been working with for a little while, and then consolidation of different systems into one. So Danae, just really appreciate the work you did here. I can't hear you.
You're on mute.
There we go.
There.
I was trying to keep it in compliance with the thank you very much. Appreciate it. It was a team effort and partnerships throughout the organization that got us to the point where we're at today. And I'm just very happy that it all worked out. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So do you manage, imagine you could help commissioners keep track of what they need to do?
Yes.
She's just laughing.
This is great. What you bring is a very needed blessing to various parts of the organization. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, Danae. Okay, Jim White, who's here. Jim, you want to come on up? So Jim was nominated for the work he did on the Washington Clean Fuel Standards, and you actually saw some work on this a couple months back. And what Jim did specifically is the rules were being applied to this new standard. Jim actually saw that these clean fuel credits, it wasn't clear where they were going to go. And what Jim did was worked with a group of utilities and the Department of Ecology to ensure that the credits went to the utilities, first and foremost. So any credits that would be acquired would be utilized in the county. And that way the benefits would stay here in the county, where some of the other options would result in the credits going elsewhere and the benefits going elsewhere. So Jim, just appreciate the work you did, and certainly a demonstration of taking ownership, seeing something that wasn't clearly solidified and making it work for all the customers in Chelan County and the benefits staying here. So appreciate the work you did there.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was a learning experience. I knew nothing about low carbon fuel standards and what it meant. I heard that Washington had passed a low carbon fuel standard, didn't know what it was, took the legislation and just started to design a program based on just reading the law, which is just, like trying to sort my way through it, and came up, well, this is what it says, and then trying to piece together how California and others had done it. And it had turned out, and then that created a model for calculating credits and other things. But the electric utilities were not being involved with what was going on, so helped get the other electric utilities. When the rules came out from the ecology, they were completely different, obviously, than what I had designed based on reading the law, and there was a big disconnect between the two. So it was kind of like, wait, because all the credits were going to the electric vehicle manufacturers, not to the customers. And so we were like, that's not what the law says. You know, credits for the residential credits go to the electric utilities first and then others. And so getting rules changed around, getting other utilities involved and helping them make those rule changes. And now we're in the process of implementing those and putting it into action. So anyway, it's nice to meet you, Kelly.
That's quite impressive.
Thank you.
Yeah, taking that initiative makes you wonder about how many other laws we need to dive in. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Good job, Jim. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, I recognize that right out of the chute, I skipped over agenda item number 2. And so I'd like to go back up to it for the approval of the agenda. At this time, any item on the consent agenda is subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon the request of any commissioner. And additionally, management has suggested that we place item 13 on the consent agenda. If there's no objection, I will do that. Any objection for item 13 being placed on the consent agenda? And additionally, this is that moment in time when any member of the public, and again, I don't believe I see one, would request an item be placed on the agenda, the commission would consider it. But since there's nobody here, I think we're good. All right, now back to the regular agenda, item 4.
Okay. Agenda item 4, legislative session update with Kelly Scott. Come on up, Kelly.
Thank you. happy first day of spring. Is this on?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll have to hold it pretty close to your mouth. It's hard.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Great.
Well, it's snowing at my house, so obviously the weather didn't get the report.
Soon enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We all know why we're here today. We're getting used to this. I'm getting a little more used to this after doing this a few times this session. We're going to update on the session generally, how it's going, and then narrow into some specific bills of interest we're watching. And I want to just make a note that, as you all know, session moves really quickly, but you can always reach out to me. You have my contact information. You get these lengthy updates from me every Monday, so please do take advantage of that. I'd love to dig deeper on any of these, answer questions in more depth when it's convenient for you all. Okay, today marks the 71st day of the 105-day session. Of the more than 2,100 bills that have been introduced this year, 611 have made it through the House of Origin cutoff and are still alive. We won't be talking about all 611 bills today, but it will just feel like it. The housing and firearms legislation are the ones really getting a lot of the headlines. You've probably seen there was some local news about these ones recently. On the housing front, bills aimed at increasing missing middle housing, so things like duplexes and triplexes, as well as bills to streamline the housing construction permitting process are still moving right along. And then there are several bills making their way through the legislature to address gun violence, one banning the sale and manufacture of assault-style weapons, which is getting a lot of coverage. That's not to say that it's been quiet in the energy world. It has not, and we'll get to those as well. The rest of the session will be guided by the deadlines listed here. Next Wednesday is the opposite House Policy Committee cutoff date, and then April 4th is the opposite House Fiscal Committee cutoff. The last day to pass opposite House bills would be April 12th, and then April 23rd, we're still set to end on time. That'll be the last day of the session. Okay, we can settle into the slide for a few minutes. All these bills have passed one chamber, so they are still alive. The green, yellow, and red indicate how we're thinking about them, with green indicating our active support. Yellow for those that are on our radar, likely won't impact significantly us here. And then red for the bills where we're still engaging with legislators and trying to amend it in certain ways to mitigate some of that impact. To recap on 1032, it creates a statewide model for utility wildfire mitigation plans and requires utilities to create their own plans to review them every 3 years and have them be approved by our locally elected boards. And it makes some improvements to the already existing utility wildfire advisory committee to improve coordination. The version that passed the House unanimously, which we supported, will likely get through the Senate this session in its current form, and it's scheduled for a committee vote in Senate Energy tomorrow. This bill, once again, with utilities at the table, we were able to come up with a bill that will hopefully strengthen wildfire mitigation across the state while recognizing the important need that local utilities have, where we need to coordinate with our fire crews on the ground during and before a wildfire event.
Is this the same bill that was essentially the same bill that was vetoed last year?
Not vetoed. It passed the Senate, did not advance in the House. This was the one where, when it was first introduced last year by Senator Rolfes, we had some high concerns about some of the language around liability.
Okay, this isn't the Mossbrucker bill.
No, that's,
okay,
that's
okay, gotcha,
coming up
gotcha,
next.
Okay.
Great transition there. So on to the Mossbrucker bill, HB 1117. This one we do really like.
Okay.
And it passed the House, so which I didn't know that was going to happen. It would direct state agencies to focus on the risks to grid reliability as part of an existing standing meeting on resource adequacy. We've supported the bill because it recognizes the electric grid is undergoing profound changes, with fossil fuels coming offline and with a greater reliance on variable energy resources like wind and solar. It is essentially the same language that was vetoed last year after passing the legislature unanimously. But Rep. Mossbrucker did work with the governor to soften some of the language. Nothing really substantive. It's there's some semantic language there. We still really like it. It passed the House unanimously March 4th. We think because of these changes, it might have a path through the governor's office without a veto this year. It had a hearing last Friday in Senate Energy, and we'll be watching to see if it gets scheduled for a committee vote before next Wednesday's opposite House policy committee cutoff. That's positive. SB 5145 is the bill sponsored by Senator Short and put forward by Grant County PUD to clarify existing liability protections for public recreational use of lands or waters under a FERC hydro license, and we have supported that legislation as well. The bill would add three additional uses, boating, swimming, and fishing, to the existing hydro recreational liability statute. That statute already includes protection from injuries sustained while kayaking, canoeing, and rafting. It passed the Senate unanimously and was referred to House Civil Rights and Judiciary, and it's scheduled for a public hearing on Wednesday, and we will again weigh in with our support. Into the yellow. 5165 was requested by Governor Inslee. It would add some transmission elements to utilities' integrated resource plans. Transmission experts from several utilities, including our own, weighed in with the governor's office, with the bill sponsors on multiple occasions, shared some recommended changes, and most of those were incorporated into the bill. Our internal transmission folks are pleased with how the bill stands now and passed the Senate by a vote of 36-13. Now a new version of the bill that includes even more of our stakeholder comments is scheduled for a vote in House Energy tomorrow. I think this is one where when we began hearing about this before session, there was some concern, there were confusion. What does the state really want to do here? Do they actually want to own and build their own lines? Do they want to create a new state entity for building transmission? Those ideas were met with quite a bit of pushback. And now instead, the bill got to a really positive place. We like that it recognizes the very real need that our power system is going to require additional transmission capacity to achieve the state's clean energy objectives. So we continue to monitor this one. To the siting bill, 1216, another governor request. It attempts to streamline the siting process for new clean energy facilities, and we've been quietly monitoring this one. It would create a clean energy siting coordinating council, would streamline the environmental review process, and it would have a particular focus on green hydrogen projects statewide and solar energy projects in the Columbia Basin. And notably, it would also direct Washington State University to study pump storage siting. Okay, on to HB 1521. This one would impose a quote, duty of good faith and fair dealing on self-insured employers and the third-party administrators they employ. It would increase fines for rule violations. It passed the House with a vote of 69-27 and is scheduled for a vote in Senate Labor and Commerce on Thursday. The Washington Self-Insurers Association is concerned about this one, about the vague, what they see as a vague duty backed by stiff mandatory and discretionary penalties. They contend the issue is already settled in recent legislation, and they're proposing some amendments to limit the scope of the bill. They've been really out in front on this one, and we've been kind of taking their lead. We have weighed in and shared some of our concerns with our legislators just for their situational awareness. 1329, you'll recall, would prohibit utilities from disconnecting customers for non-payment during episodes of high heat, and it was a request from the Attorney General. The bill continues to get. We like the direction it's been going, and the bill sponsors have taken some input from utilities. There's still some language that some utilities worry could be difficult to carry out operationally. Most, if not all, utilities, including Chelan, already has extreme heat policies in place. Our staff work directly with our customers who are struggling to pay their power bill. Our goal is always centered on how we can work with our customers to keep the power on, not turn it off. Additionally, Chelan PUD has a procedure in place that suspends any residential customer disconnects for non-payment on extremely hot days. So clearly we agree with the bill's intent, but we have been sharing suggestions about ways to make the bill make more sense across the state. It passed the House 6431 and is scheduled for a hearing tomorrow in Senate Energy. Utility stakeholders are working in the Senate to make some additional changes, specifically around what would trigger that moratorium. We need clarity there, and some of the reconnection requirements. There's still real hope that this bill can get to a place that protects customers and reflects how utilities work. Okay. So these ones are not as high on our watch list, but still of note. 1542, we've spoke about in the past. It's bipartisan. It would require automated external defibrillators to be available when work is being performed in high voltage lines. At Chelan Beauty, we've been supplying AEDs for the last 20 years. Dave in here earlier. This bill just makes sense. Utilities are, for the most part, already doing this, so this bill would just create that basic standard of care across the state. It passed the House unanimously, and it's scheduled for a hearing in Senate Labor and Commerce right about now at 10:30 today. So I will have an update for you in next week's newsletter. 5094, under this bill, PUD's operating Group A water systems would have both new planning requirements and perhaps some additional funding to go along with it to make their water systems more resilient. We're just watching this one. We're neutral. I believe WAPUTA is neutral as well. It's all the language also, is also included in another bill moving, like a larger climate planning bill, so seems like something will probably pass. And then this is another one, 5562, that's gotten a few headlines recently. It was introduced by House Energy Committee Chair Beth Dolio at the request of Puget Sound Energy as a way for PSE to set up the process and write the rules by which they ease out of the natural gas business. Under the bill, PSE would stop connecting new gas customers after June of this year and would begin filing a gas decarbonization plan with UTC. Passed the House 5244. It had a public hearing in Senate Energy last week where a lot of people came out to testify in opposition. The opposition to this bill has grown significantly, in fact. And the ins and outs of the legislation are changing quite a bit. There's been quite a few different versions introduced. Yeah. Did you have a question? Or
No, I'm just agreeing with you.
I mean, I don't know what it looks like right now. Yesterday it looked different than it will today. But because this is an issue primarily between PSE and the UTC, we have stayed on the sidelines. But, you know, it's definitely part of that larger conversation about energy use in the state, which, as you all know, it's tangled, it's interconnected. So we're keeping this on our radar.
Does that, you know, you may not know because we are on the sidelines, but does that mean that all of those people in Puget Sound service territory that have gas furnaces will be faced with significant redo of their homes?
It would prohibit new hookups once, but if you already have gas in your home, I don't think it impacts you in the near term.
Well, yeah, but looking down the road,
Sure.
Yeah, wonder if it would ultimately force people to redo their entire electrical, which could impact not us, but the electrical sector.
Well, and that's one of the things that Snohomish and some of the other utilities, electrical utilities on the west side, were concerned about and engaged on. At some point, some language that they thought was favorable was included, and I think it was taken out just to make PSE make sure to coordinate with them to make sure that these utility companies have the capacity to bring on all these new electrical customers.
Yeah.
Okay, bills that did not pass the cutoff on March 8th, for better or worse, this list is very short, as you can see. These are the dead bills. Net metering is one you may have heard about from WAPUTA. There was a high level of concern on this one. 1427 would have expanded the state's net metering cap and increased the allowable size of net metered systems. WAPUTA did circulate some proposed changes and some legislative asks. They were afraid the bill would lead to a higher cost burden on low-income, non-net metering customers. But in the end, this one, while it was considered a live write-up until the cutoff, it ultimately did not have the votes. However, the caveat is there's now talk of getting something in the budget to study that potential cost shift. So we may see something on net metering this year. We'll continue to monitor that. And then, oh yes, 5577, we really like this one. It would have allocated up to $200 million for a competitive grant program for local governments, including PUDs, to use as match funds when applying for federal programs for broadband access build out. The state's looking at this large tranche of federal BEAD funding in the next year or so, and that program requires a pretty steep 25% match. This bill would have recognized that. The $200 million would be roughly the 25% of the $900 million expected to be Washington's share of that BEAD money, but it died in committee. However, again, not really dead. There was $50 million for this purpose in the governor's budget, so we may see at least some funding passed this year. Speaking of budgets, it is that time of the session when the legislature will now begin to publicly focus on the development and approval of the state's biennial budgets, the operating, capital, and transportation. Governor Inslee released his proposed 2023-2025 budget in December. Excuse me, that should say December, not January. And he called for spending $70 billion over the two-year period starting this July. His budget does include $5 billion to create a replacement plan for the electrical generation from the four lower Snake River dams, and it includes an additional $5 million to study how to replace the barge transportation provided by those dams. It's very likely that there will be funding for these studies in the budgets that we will see come out of the legislature soon. We'll be watching this closely. We'll be working with our Mid-Sea partners, with our associations as appropriate, and those conversations are happening now. While we haven't yet seen any budget proposals from the legislature, they are imminent. The Senate capital budget is tentatively expected to be released this morning, if it hasn't been since we've been in this room. The Senate operating budget is expected Friday morning. The House will likely release its budgets next week. After the budgets are released, they'll be immediately scheduled for public hearing and a vote out of committee, typically within a day or two. Many people across the state this week will be scrambling to see if their priorities were included. For instance, things like broadband grant funding. Today at 2 p.m., I believe, is when the highly anticipated state quarterly revenue forecast will be released, and that will also help shape these House and Senate budgets. There are indications that revenues do remain positive. The picture might not be quite as rosy as it was the last time, but we shall see at 2 p.m. Questions?
Great report. I do have a question, but Gary, I'm going to call on your memory to help me ask my question.
You're in trouble already.
At the Wapoota Board of Directors meeting last Friday, there was a healthy discussion about the rulemaking process. So this is not about legislation, but about the rulemaking process. And there was language. See, here's where I get stuck, because this discussion went on for about 15 minutes at the board meeting about various entities' hands being shown as to how they feel about the utilities governing themselves.
This was the Commerce Department.
Commerce Department. Does this ring in a familiar
yes.
bell?
Yeah.
You want to share with us what you've heard?
Right. Mandated by the Clean Energy Transformation Act, or CETA, was this report from Commerce that just came out about 2 weeks ago. We're just diving into it, and it compiles and lists all the things that the utilities are doing for low-income assistance programs.
There it is, low-income, yeah.
Internally, we're diving into that this week. I know Wapoota has expressed some strong concerns about just the general tone of the report towards...
Sort of like waving a red flag in front of a bull. That's how strong the concern is. I mean, it was quite the discussion.
I've never seen George quite so animated.
Really?
I was pretty excited about it.
Yeah, because it basically calls out, I think it's whoever has written the report, he said it's one of the rare times when they're really being honest in their writing and their true feelings about public utilities are showing. So there's a concern out there, big concern. So.
And then it might be the basis for future conversations about centralizing some of those programs, yeah.
Yes.
We will we'll take a look at it more in depth, and I can loop all of you into those conversations as we go along.
Or just keep it surprised. Yeah.
We will do.
Great report from my perspective, commissioners.
Excellent, Kelly. Good job.
It went a little long.
we might make you go longer next time. You don't know.
Thanks, Kelly. All right, agenda item number 5. We've got a Oroville-Tenasket Irrigation District Water Supply Agreement, and we've got Marcy Clement and Aline Underwood, and there's a resolution this afternoon. We thought we would do a presentation this morning with those that have been working hard on this just to allow more time for discussion. So Marcy and Aline, take it away.
Thanks. I'll get started. So Aline Underwood, Director of Natural... I think I said Aline Underwear, didn't I? Aline Underwood, Director of Natural Resources. Thank you this morning. With me is Marcy Clement, which I'm sure, I hope all of you, most of you would have an opportunity to work with. I'm really excited to have her talk about the Oroville-Tenasket Irrigation District Agreement. And wanted to just take 1 second to thank Marcy. Today is her last full day at the district. She's taken a job elsewhere. And we're very excited for her and her new endeavors. But I would be remiss in not acknowledging just the fantastic work. We're here today because of the work that Marcy's done to forward think, to keep the district's high values and mission and vision always in mind when looking for opportunities for the district. So I just want to thank Marcy for everything she's done, put her on the spot, and just say that we'll miss you for sure. So thank you.
Thanks, Aline. Thanks, Aline.
No problem.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Commissioners. Yes, so today to talk about the water service agreement with Oroville and Tenasket Irrigation District. There we go. So why we're here today, talk about the reason for the project, the benefits to our customer and customer owners, go over some of the proposed contract items, and then finally we'll be requesting approval of the resolution at the afternoon session. So the reason for this agreement with Oroville-Tenasket Irrigation District, we've got 3 long-term Federal Energy Regulatory Commission licenses. And within those licenses, we will need to be able to continue to meet our current and future license obligations, often which water covers that. Without water, we can't continue to do the things we do. Also, to fulfill our district mission and vision, it's important for us to be able to adapt to climate change, which may include more variability over the years. We've seen it already in the past 10-year period. And when there's a shortage of water, that impacts our junior water rights, with senior water rights having a priority over ours. And also to retain flexibility for future opportunities. With a FERC license that long, there's all kinds of things, you know, that may come up or other obligations that we may have. Our objectives for Chelan PUD are to protect the district assets to enhance the quality of life for Chelan County, to protect the district's municipal supplies, parks, and our ability to meet our FERC recreation obligations, and not lastly at all, but to protect the district's ability to operate reliably and meet all of the FERC and NERC, which is our, I wrote that acronym down because that one I'm not as... being in licensing, I'm not as familiar with, the North American Reliability Corporation, to ensure that our power is reliable. A bit more about the water bank itself. You know, what is this thing? The OTID, or Oroville-Tenasket Irrigation District, created a water bank in 2019 through the state, Washington State Department of Ecology's Trust Water Program. The source of that water is Lake Osuyus and the Similkameen River and the Okanagan River, so it's up further, closer to Canada. Ecology approved the use of that water for multiple downstream purposes, including in-stream flow. And through a long-term partnership with OTID, Chelan PUD would like to acquire access to 4,000 acre-feet of water on an annual basis. benefit for our customer owners will be that we will gain a significant asset to meet future water supplies, possibly for hatcheries, parks, water systems, and power generation. The district negotiated a lease based on fair market price with OTID. And in the near term, the water will be used to maintain in-stream flows until the water is needed. And so that water will remain in the Similkameen, Okanagan, and Columbia rivers until it's needed. In the long term, staff are evaluating opportunities for local partnerships. Some points to the agreement. The quantity is 4,000 acre-feet of water on an annual basis. Annual payment of $1 million. With increases tied to the consumer price index beginning at year 10. The duration can be indefinite with termination rights as set forth in the agreement. Chelan PUD can terminate the agreement. And then this afternoon, we'll be requesting approval of the resolution to enter into a water service agreement with the Oroville-Tenasket Irrigation District. Questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
Not a question, but what a way to go out, bringing this huge project.
I know, and hello, nice to meet
nice to meet you.
I've met you before. But sorry, I haven't met you. Well,
thank you for the hard work.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
You know, Kelly doesn't know just how big you're going to be missed. She'll learn. We'll share a lot with her.
I'll be like, Marcy then.
Yes, commissioners, I just want to share in saying from the legal compliance group and audit group's perspective, going to miss Marcy a lot. Mm-hmm. So she's brought our water program a long way in the time that she's been here, and really appreciate the efforts. Joy to work with. Very knowledgeable. Really great perspective. With her history at the agency and then also as a regulated entity. So really appreciate it. Thanks, Marcy.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, I would just echo that as well. I told Marcy this story last week, but I'll never forget. I think it was the first week she started was the Wanapum drawdown situation. And so... you know, one of the things we did was I identified what are all the issues. You know, obviously the energy, there's the dam safety component you heard a little bit about this morning, and the water. And we said, and we identified, okay, who do we have that lead each one of those areas? And, oh, Marcy. Marcy's brand new. So Marcy joined the team. And I have to say, it just struck me when she started this, you know, monumental issue with all kinds of issues and risks, and she just dove right in. Her involvement was pretty remarkable, not knowing a lot of people here at the PUD and who to talk to about things, but she didn't hesitate to ask all the questions, and she provided her expertise right off the get-go. So we've had fortunate time to have, you know, eight years plus with Marcy, and just appreciate all the good work that whole time.
Thank you.
We'll miss you.
Thank you. We'll miss you all too. I actually got lost that first week. I couldn't find my way out of here.
That's by design.
Just want to say one thing good for you on your new job and opportunity out there. Also, I agree with Kelly. What a way to go out. This is a really, really powerful thing for the district, and it's extreme value, and it will be used for years and years and years, decades ahead. And you can always bring water down the river, but you can't take it back up. So this is, you know, positioning is always a good thing, and so you've done a really good job. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I can't take all the credit by any means. Had a great team. Great sounding board, always, sure. Always. So in the nine years, 1 month. So thank you.
Marcy, I just want to chime in and say remarkable. That was a word Kirk used, but it certainly fits you. And your time here has been incredible. You cast a huge shadow, and it will be very difficult to fill. but I wish you the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you for all you've done to the district.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
So you kind of came in with a bang and you're going out with a bang.
Better bang on the out, I think.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, are there any other questions on the agreement itself? Want to make sure we don't lose sight of the agreement and saying our goodbyes to Marcy, but just want to make sure there's time for questions.
I have a legal question I'll ask Eric later about.
That my only add, commissioners, would be the termination provision, and to say thank you to Daniel on our team, who's been working hand in glove with Marcy and the rest of our team, and Sarah Mack, our outside counsel, on the agreement proper, and pretty valuable to secure a unilateral termination right, even though it does require a couple years' notice. We have to meet our obligations. So, of course, when I use the term unilateral termination right, that always assumes that we're meeting our end of the deal and the commitment. So really a good outcome from the district perspective and a good way to preserve and protect both interests, the future need interest without the termination right, but also the ability, if for some reason we decide we no longer need it, we have the ability to step off on a relatively short fuse, at least in the water world. As well. So yep. Really appreciate the forward thinking.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
So we've arrived at the end of the morning agenda, and I see some people have snuck in the room, and I'm sure that Kirk has had something to do with that. That
he, there's
some manager items and a few other things that we can do. Also, a suggestion emerged that we are in need this afternoon of an executive session for approximately 45 minutes.
Correct.
And so maybe we can do a lot of our smaller items and our executive session this morning and then move to our regular agenda this afternoon, if that works for you. Okay. So.
Okay. Well, if you're okay, we'll jump all the way down to agenda item number 18.
Okay.
Manager items.
Okay.
We'll start with a Microsoft open house that's being scheduled for the Malaga property. And with us is Casey Hall and Rachel Hansen.
Good morning, commissioners. This is Rachel Hansen. I work in communications. So Microsoft is planning a community meeting Wednesday, March 29th, 6 to 8 p.m. at Mission View Elementary in South Wenatchee. So the purpose of that open house is to share some information about Microsoft's planned Malaga data center project and provide the community an opportunity to learn more, see photo renderings, and ask questions of some of the agencies involved, including the PUD and others. So Casey and PUD staff will be on hand. We're not planning to staff a table by any means, but we'll be available to answer any questions that the public might have about our work to help meet those infrastructure needs. So we just want to give you a heads up about the meeting. You might see some media attention and community discussion about it. Casey, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to, Casey Hall, project manager, working on the Microsoft project with our team here at the district. Just wanted to give you a quick update if you didn't know what's going on as far as schedule with the project. So we're working closely with Microsoft, have weekly or bi-weekly meetings with their design team. Their schedule right now is they submitted their SEPA to the county earlier this month with the anticipation of starting grading out at the Malaga site in May of this year. They're planning on turning, at least their schedule is to turn that site over to the Switchyard substation site in September for our work. So to meet that schedule, we've been pushing procurements out. There's about 13 procurement packages we've put out, or haven't put out yet. We're working on, I think it's the fifth. The long lead time items, of course, were first. Transformers, circuit breakers. We're now starting to work on the steel package for the transmission lines and the switchyard. And then the big packages are going to be the labor bids for the actual construction, which will be June bid time so that we can meet that September date. So, yeah, a lot of moving parts, a lot of push right now on BCS trying to get these packages out, but we've made success, like I said, gotten those early ones out so that we've secured order on that equipment so it's here on time.
I'd just like to add that Casey and Lance Byers are paving the way for us in terms of trying to do something a different way, and that is a monumental task and the work that they have in front of them. And normally we would do the project management, the engineering, the construction management, all along the way ourselves for a project of this magnitude. But what Casey and Lance are doing are utilizing consultants and contractors to the greatest extent we can. You can imagine a project of this size on the timeline that we're faced with. If we were to manage it the way we traditionally would, we'd be taking a tremendous amount of staff and not getting all the other things done at the same time for a period of time. And so what they're doing is pretty remarkable, actually, where they're at already on this project. Just and they obviously need support. You mentioned procurement and contract services are heavily involved, so there are things that are being done by staff, but this approach is something we're going to likely need to utilize in the future, so they're kind of paving the way for us.
I was going to ask that question, whether we could use this as a model.
That's what they're doing, is trying to create this as a model that works well, so that we can respond in a timely fashion to customer requests and needs. And we're just not accustomed to doing projects this size this way. So, yeah.
You bet. Casey, I just wanted to ask, are you seeing any softening in terms of supply chain issues and the ability to secure equipment?
Not at this time. No. We still have a backlog, it seems, within the market on materials. You know, we transformers specifically, we're still seeing a lot longer lead times, like year and a half. There hasn't been, sounds like it's coming, but it's just not here yet. Yeah. So, yeah, not yet.
Any other questions? The Microsoft meeting, that's more a Q&A, and so it wouldn't be a, quote, presentation of any type.
Well, there's the way I understand it, there's going to be some table set up where people can ask questions, and then it will move into a short presentation and a Q&A to follow by Microsoft.
And the reason I was posing that question was wondering what the potential value might be of commissioners attending that meeting. I mean, we probably obviously have a higher level of knowledge than the average public, but and would it be advisable for more than two commissioners to attend a meeting of that nature?
You're all looking at me like you want to answer.
I can answer.
The advisability is something you're going to have to figure out for yourself. If more than three of you or three or more participate, then you would probably want to gavel in if you're going to filter your questions or take questions and provide that feedback. As always, if you're going just to observe, that's not a meeting, but maybe best to plan as though you would be approached and asked to engage in some fashion. So let you all decide. Happy to help facilitate that either way.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's something we can mull on.
I'm not entirely sure what the total agenda
and what the format is. Yeah.
Right. So
yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
And another quick question.
Yes.
I've watched an excessive amount of television this last weekend called March Madness. But in that, I've been seeing some advertising from our local utility. Is the cameo voice about our dams somebody that we know well?
Well, I'll have to review.
I think it's you.
Is it me? Is it me? I know I was involved in a recruiting ad. I think Neil took the lead on putting that on the. Well, I know that there's some television advertising going on. I'm not exactly.
It has to do about the dams being green, renewable, and you know, long lasting.
I'll have to review that.
Oh, okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you both. The next manager item I have, and it's the last one for me this morning, is I'd like to invite Kelly Boyd and Sue Wiersma and Heather Ireland up. There's been, you've all been reading in the newspaper a couple of recent bank failures, and just thought it would be prudent for Kelly and her team to share just when something like that happens, the review process that we go through and the evaluation that takes place as a result of that. Both district investments and counterparty reviews are really important. So with that, I'll turn it over to Kelly.
Thank you, Kirk. Yeah, Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial Risk Officer. And joining me are Heather Ireland, Treasurer, and Sue Wiersma, Credit Risk Program Manager. And it's always great to take the opportunity to get to see the kind of hands-on subject matter experts. You get to see Heather here and there on some more procedural matters, so here's a chance to get to see her in action and what we do. And then, Sue, you really don't get much chance to come in front of the board. And Sue is on our credit risk management side of things, our hands-on subject matter expert. So it's great to be able to have you meet more people and, you know, relating to touching base on the, all of the concerns that are going on in the banking industry right now. Our quick answer is that we don't have any current exposure. We have an extra layer of protection for our deposits as public funds, and we are closely monitoring the situation should anything change. So giving more detail around that, though, on a cash management perspective, we haven't experienced any negative impacts in the safety or liquidity of our deposits, and we haven't experienced any delays in our bank processing times. We use a stable traditional bank for the majority of our daily transactions, and then we have our bank deposits spread amongst multiple banks for that diversification. In addition, according to Washington State statute, our deposits in banks and credit unions are defined as public funds. And so as public funds, they can only be deposited into approved public depositories monitored by the Public Deposit Protection Commission, the PDPC. This really rolls off the tongue. That's why I had to read it straight off the paper. But the PDPC program provides a significant layer of protection for public funds above what the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, provides. So the PDPC program requires that those qualified public depositories collateralize at higher levels. And then if there was a situation where one of those institutions became insolvent, all of those qualified public depositories share in that liability to ensure that any uncollateralized balances are safeguarded. So any of those public funds. So that's that extra layer of safeguarding for us as a public entity. You know, it has pluses and minuses. It also means that not all depositories really want to do business with public entities because of all of the extra requirements. Mm. But it is an extra layer of safety, and the pendulum swings a little bit back and forth. I have a feeling it's going to be maybe swinging in the direction about the level of additional collateralization and percentage of coverage on that. So right now it's at a 50%, which is higher than the normal, but it's been as high as 100%. So that's where that pendulum swings of how difficult it is for, not difficult, the extra that entities have to go to for being a provider of public funds services. So, and as required by that statute, we do only work with the institutions that are both FDIC insured and PDPC approved, which gives us that significant extra layer of protection against a bank failure. That's kind of the credit side of it, the cash side of it. On the credit side of it, which we don't always think about right off, is that in our power marketing and power management arena, where we are working with our surplus sales, We also have counterparties in those transactions and entities who provide letters of credit to collateralize some of those entities that we also looked at. We don't have any entities providing letters of credit and or our counterparties with the two banks of current concern. And we don't have anyone who's requested kind of pre-approval of reliance on those entities. But if there was a case of that, and the entity that was maybe providing the credit assurance fell below our requirements for providing credit, our credit documents do allow us to request a replacement credit assurance with a different entity that does meet our criteria. So there's an extra layer for our letters of credit there that provides protection. And then the letters of credit are also a secondary exposure because first the initial counterparty would need to default before a letter of credit would even come into play. And in the current high price environment for wholesale electric prices, the idea is that if a counterparty was to default, you can resell that contract into a market at a higher price and remain whole against that. So that in our current environment, that's another layer of protection. So with that high energy prices, we're not even holding collateral for a lot of our counterparties because the value of those contracts in the market provide us that protection of the ability to resell them and fully recoup the committed prices currently. So
how often does that get revisited within a contract?
Daily.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Sue is our subject matter expert who
that
does
brought a smile to her face.
Creates a lot of paperwork.
we do a collateral posting requirement daily. So with all of those items, we don't have any material exposure currently, but we are closely monitoring the situation for both those letters of credit issuers and our counterparties in those transactions. So I think you can kind of tell from my description of all of this, we actually apply those HPI principles of layers of defense in how we approach both the cash side with lots of diversification and the credit side with lots of layers of different protections that come into play as you go through time. So we don't have any current concerns beyond that management, but we will continue to stay on top of the situation and monitor closely for any impacts that ultimately are specific to us. So are there any questions that maybe I didn't cover and what's been on your mind in these unusual times?
Questions? Carnan.
No, you certainly covered everything very thoroughly. I can see the expertise that's sitting over there. We're very fortunate that you are on this, and it sounds like we're well protected, you know, at least for the near future, and you're on top of it. So, again, good job, good expertise. It sure shows. So thank you.
Thank you. And we're very conservative in our approach, which, again, has pluses and minuses on that. But we're also always trying to look at that overall process improvement or continuous improvement of what we do, too, because there's always something that you can do maybe one step better or one step more protection. So it's a continuous effort to try to keep us in a protected position.
Go ahead, Carney.
Oh, I just want to say that, you know, my concern on this whole thing was the counterparty and how that was going to be. You know, I thought that would be our highest risk because we don't know what position they have. But you certainly have addressed that. So, you know, I can't think of anything else that I know of. But anyway, that's a good job. Yeah.
I'd just like to say, hi, Sue. Thank you for coming today. Really appreciate meeting you. And Heather, as always, really appreciate seeing you here today. You guys do a great job. Your answer is blowing me away because it's so thorough. You really do turn over every rock and look for areas of risk and control that risk. So I just want to let you know I'm very appreciative of what you do and the hard work that you do. So thank you.
And Sue, the checking of the collateral that you were speaking of on the daily basis, that's been going on well before this. That's just a standard process, right?
Yes. We started doing these collateral agreements back in 2010, I think, was when we executed our first one with our first multi-year slice product where we sold a 5% share in an auction process. So anyhow, when we first started doing these collateral calculations, they were manual, and it did take a bit of time. And, of course, we knew we had to be spot on with those. Over the years, we were so thankful we were able to get some IT attention, and those processes are automated now, so that really helps. Of course, we still keep an eye on them to see that they're working well, and, of course, we enter into new agreements sometimes that cause us to have to go back and do a little more programming work on those. But, yes, daily we send out emails with those automated collateral calculations that pull in the current market prices so that we know where we stand as far as remarketing our products at the current market prices compared to the contracted price. So,
fantastic.
I answer
you did
that. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Just to maybe connect a dot, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the Cycle of Personal Ownership Award winners, Kerwin, you might recall Kerwin being recognized. This is a few months ago, but it was in part because of, I think, the work he was doing on the automating the collateral daily review. So good connection there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. So
that's it for manager items.
So should we move into executive session then?
We could do that, or if you want to move into commission items, we're prepared to do. It's up to you.
I'm looking at the time element.
Okay.
I'm thinking maybe we should move into executive session and then we'll go back and clean up all the other items we have this after lunch. Okay. So at this time, we will move into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks, as authorized by the RCWs, to consider the selection of a site or acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price, as authorized by the RCWs, and to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of a decreased price, as provided by the RCWs, for approximately 45 minutes. We'll have to sign out and then sign in. Oh, no, we don't. It's 11:55. We're coming back into regular session, out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. We are now going to stand in recess until 1 o'clock when we come back into regular session. Good afternoon. This is March 20, 2023, a meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District. We met this morning in study session, and this afternoon we're meeting in business session. We do not have a terribly long agenda this afternoon, but we will start right up where we left off this morning. And the first item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Commissioners, the consent agenda has been presented to us, and we have opted to add resolution number 13 to that agenda. Is there a motion for the approval?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is carried. So with that, we will move on to the regular agenda and start with resolution number 11.
Come on up, John. Resolution number 11 is a resolution authorizing the issuance of Guaranteed Maximum Price Amendment Number 3 with GE Renewables U.S. LLC of Greenwood Village, Colorado, provide the procurement and manufacturing of long lead time components for the second and third units for contract number 18-10 for the Rock Island Dam Powerhouse 2 Generating Unit Rehabilitation Project. With us is John Sagerser.
Thank you, Kirk. I don't want to repeat too much. He's kind of giving us a summary of what we're here to talk about. Just to let you know, a guaranteed maximum price amendment, or a GMP as it's often referred to, is like a mini contract. So it has a specific scope of work, a specific schedule and budget associated with it. It does carry all the technical terms and conditions as well as the legal and commercial terms and conditions associated with the overall master design build agreement. The specific scope for this GMP is to manufacture long lead components for the second and third units planned to be rehabilitated, which is U7, Unit U7, and Unit U3, respectively. So for Unit U7, or the second unit, we would be manufacturing the turbine runner hub bushings, as well as other hub internal components, the discharge ring, as well as the discharge ring expansion joint. For the third unit, or U3, we would manufacture the runner hub bushings, the stator core laminations, and the stator windings. Procuring these components now will help us ensure that the second unit outage starts as planned, immediately following the first unit, which is expected to be around the third quarter of 2024. So we're about a year in advance. That second unit is expected to be completed in about 14 months, which is 2 months shorter than the first unit is currently planned, just for information. The third unit will begin immediately after the second unit and is planned to take 12 months to complete. The specific cost for GMP number 3 is $9,038,126.93. Which brings our overall not to exceed contract amount for all of work associated with GE at just under $114.5 million. We also are requesting to increase the capital budget for U7 from $6 million to $12.3 million, which includes a planned expenditure of $4.4 million in 2023. We would establish a capital budget for U3 at $3.3 million, which includes $2 million planned to be spent in 2023 as well. It's important to note that requesting capital budget and capital budget increases is planned and intentional for this particular project, and it's how we've been doing it, mainly so that we can ensure the accuracy of our budgets and our planned spend rates associated with this particular project. However, it's not our standard process, as you guys may know. And in this case, lessons learned, some of the focus and communication regarding the planned spend rate and the activities we had planned for 2023 did not happen because it was not part of our standard plan, business planning process. So going forward, what we're going to do is include these planned expenditures for this project in our annual business planning and budget approval process. So you'll see those communications in the fall of 2023, similar to all the other projects that we do on our other projects. Lastly, I would want to let you know that we do have one other planned visit with you guys. So in midsummer this year, we plan to come back with guaranteed maximum price amendment number 4, which would be for the site work associated with the second unit. It would be a large, pretty large expense, $40 to $50 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. And it would also require budget revisions for the second and third units as well. The third unit is specific because components we take out of the second will refurbish them and put them into the third, so those expenses go with the third one. And that's why you'll see that in that GMP. Any questions at this time?
Commissioners? Carnan.
thank you. Welcome. For the way that you're going to go about this. I really do appreciate the fact that you come back and you say, okay, this is kind of incremental mm-hmm. as we go. And I think that's really beneficial in the budgeting process so that we just don't look at a figure and then say, well, why didn't you meet this or that?
Right.
You're being transparent with it, and that really helps me understand how we're going through and with the budgeting process that we're being respectful in that regard as well. Okay. The other question I have is on Unit 7 and 3, when we complete those repairs, what is the life expectancy of those units? What are we looking at as far as the repairs and how far this will take us out into the future?
Yep. So for all the units, they have the same design life calculation, which is going to be in the 40 to 50-year life range.
Wow.
Is what we're expecting to get as far as life extension on these particular units.
Well, that's great value, then, what we're putting into these units. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Gary?
John Carnan just said something that brought to mind something we'd been working on, and that is the warranty. Will any of this be under a warranty program?
Yes. So the long lead components will be included in the warranty. What we did with the first unit is we actually rolled them into the work associated with Unit 1 so that the warranty started when we finished commissioning of that first unit. And so we'll do the same with these particular components is when we execute the GMP or the field work associated with them, we'll roll the components into that specific GMP so that their warranty starts with the rest of the unit when it's commissioned and put into service.
Great. Good. Thank you.
You might, with two new board members, you might share the uniqueness of the warranty.
Oh, got it. Yes.
Yeah, this is a warranty that's pretty unique to the industry, actually.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
So we have something that's called an extended correction period, or ECP, because we like acronyms. And it has a 10-year warranty for all the work associated with the units from the time that they're commissioned or put back into service. So for U5, which is our first unit, when it goes back into service in June of 2024, we'll have a 10-year warranty on all the work associated with that unit. The caveat with that... It is really good.
Yeah.
It's a good warranty. Part of that carries a digital monitoring system that has actually been installed. Currently, we have parts and pieces of it installed. Currently, where GE will monitor all of the digital information that we have associated with those units. They monitor it remotely and report back to us on a monthly and quarterly basis on what they're seeing as far as the health and status of our particular units.
Wow.
This is something that they wanted required for the extended warranty so that they could ensure if there was a problem, we'd catch it as soon as possible and get it corrected before there was other, what they called knock-on damage or, you know, damage caused to other parts because of something that went undetected.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, I'm not familiar with that because I'm familiar with other types of insurance that we had on our units. And I think at one time we had insurance for loss of power on one project. Is that right? Did we have something there, a provision for?
Loss of generation.
Loss of generation. I can't.
Yes, for certain causes. For certain causes.
Oh, okay.
So depending upon.
This doesn't include any of that.
No, this is actually a really. I'm going to say somewhat unique warranty arrangement that was negotiated between the district's project team that John led along with GE's project team. There was a desire in the industry to have, I think on our end, so the utility side, the operator side, more longer warranty with greater certainty given the investment that was being made. And I think there were obviously challenges on the other side from the GE, any, I'm going to say manufacturing
perspective to ensure that the units are being operated the way that they would be expected. There would be enough of the investigative and detective type work to be able to catch them early on. It's like, you know, driving down the highway without oil in your car. Pretty soon something bad is going to happen. Right. So making sure somebody's looking at that little light if it comes on is a good deal. So I think it's actually, I would think of it as somewhat unique, if not unique, in it's the unique. Industry.
Is that our crews doing the work, or is that what GE doing?
Our crews do all the work.
Wow.
So we do all the maintenance and operation, but as Eric alluded to, in addition to the digital monitoring, they will also get access to our maintenance records, again, to make sure that we're doing the maintenance and preventive maintenance plans that they prescribe associated with the unit are being followed.
But I heard that it's our crews doing all this work. It's not GE Chemical Contracting. We still get this type of insurance.
Well, so
it's pretty good.
Their crews do the rehabilitation and installation.
Their crews do.
Our crews do the maintenance.
Okay, that's what I was trying to understand.
Yep.
I know some of the crews say, hey, you know, there's that movement, we want to do these things. And, you know,
oh, yeah.
I didn't know if they're going to do that or not. So.
Well, that was a big deal. It was easy for them to say, yeah, we'll come in and do all your maintenance for you.
Oh, no, okay.
No. That's not the agreement.
But they're doing the rehabilitation.
They're doing the rehabilitation work.
Thank you.
It's much, I'd say it's a really new nice partnership between contractor and purchaser, particularly when you measure it against the, you know, the typical, I would say, more traditional industry warranty that we've historically experienced, which is a year, two. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
At the best. So okay. A year is by far what we see.
Pretty good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, well. You just answered one of the questions I was going to ask, is there an industry standard in which a year or two is what?
That's been our experience. Yeah. I don't know if there's a different industry somewhere else that's longer, but our experience has been.
I'd say tops prior to this, tops that I've seen is 5 years, and most of the time it is between 1 and 3.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is, and it gets to the point you were making, Commissioner Berger, and in your question, you know, the economics only works on these projects of this magnitude if the units last 40 to 50 years. Mm-hmm. So we want our contractor to have a vested interest in those lasting
sure.
40 to 50 years.
And yeah, because,
with a 10-year warranty, that helps.
Okay. Yeah. So since one of my questions was answered, I've got one more.
Okay.
And I just have to say I'm jealous of Commissioner Allen. Because she's, have you already gotten your tour of Rock Island?
No. Nope.
When is that to occur?
The 28th, I believe. Around then.
You know, I was there 15 years ago, or 14 years ago, maybe a little sooner than that. But there's a lot of stuff going on right now. Is this a good time to come for a commissioner visit?
Soon. I would say April. April or May would be the best time to come because that's when we'll start taking the discharge ring, which is the top part of the turbine. So we'll expose the turbine, things like that. Currently planned the first week in April.
And how big of a bother are commissioners coming to visit?
Now you
no bother at all.
Ready.
No bother at all. We'd love to have you.
No, these are yeah. Once in career opportunities.
That's what my sense is. Yeah. There's an opportunity here for us. To get educated and understand,
yep.
So
the magnitude.
We need to make that happen in the appropriate format.
So between the first week in April and mid June time frame, any time in there would be okay, and you would see a lot. That's when we're currently planned to finish disassembly of the first unit. So it'll be all torn apart. All the pieces will be. Wherever across the country, really, in Canada for refurbishment and things like that. So sometime in the next, you know, 2 months, mid-April to end of May would be a really good time. You'll see a lot of neat things.
Okay, well, we'll, you know.
My guess is you're about to have it scheduled.
Yeah.
I can see this pile. Yeah. Yeah. It's probably already done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Enough said.
All right.
Thank you. Great presentation.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the negotiations there, too.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Ready for the next one?
You bet.
Agenda item number 12 is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders, change order number 23, and further approving field work order change order number 24 for the Service Center project with Absher Construction Company of Puyallup, Washington, for construction of the Service Center project pursuant to General Contractor Construction Manager GCCM Contract 18-91. With us is David Lodge.
Good afternoon. David Lodge, Project Management Manager. I was here not long ago to present change order 22, which established revised contract time and adjusted costs for our GCCM. So since then, we've issued and executed field work order change order 23, and that's for a variety of different issues on site that are detailed in the resolution. But about a quarter of that is for changing the roofing system on the operations buildings to mechanically fastened roof systems. That allowed us to progress that work over the winter and mitigate some of the impacts from the delays. And change order 24 now takes the framework that we established for contract time and adjusts the contract prices for six of our contractors for 10 different bid packages. So these include concrete, insulation, drywall, fire suppression, mechanical, and earthwork. So costs to our trade packages include extended general conditions, labor rate increases, labor inefficiencies, material cost escalation, equipment downtime, sub-tier costs, extended warranties, and then GCCM fee on that. So that change order is a total of $4.8 million, raising the contract price to $115 million. And it's within the budget we established in our variance last fall, so within the total project budget. Any questions?
Questions? Yep. So I'm not certain if it's a question that, you know, I think all of us commissioners go by site on a regular basis, seeing what's going on and wondering how close it's going to we're going to be to start moving in.
Oh, you and me both.
So that worries me when you say that.
Oh, I know.
Probably even more just than the two of you.
This late snow and freeze has been a challenge for our site work. The building is coming along very nice, and we're looking great for getting punch list done inside the building, but the site work is getting to be a crunch. And so we have looked at moving our move out dates to the end of May to accommodate just a little bit more time to get site paving done and be ready for moving trucks to show up.
You might share just the phased in approach.
So our phased approach is first phase, we'll bring staff into building A. We're going to be starting at the top, working our way down. That would be starting at the end of May, and that's the first turnover milestone for the contractor. So we need to have parking lots and a fence that establishes the construction site beyond the fence. Then the second phase will be the operations buildings that are the farthest along right now, and it allows us to start bringing field crews in. That'll be end of September, and that's the time when we would move our customer service interface over and open up the lobby to the public. So October is when we're planning our grand opening. And then the final phase will finish right at the end of the year, and we'll be able to bring over Fleet Shop and Fish and Wildlife. So this is the schedule that we established in that change order 22 with Absher.
So maybe it'll go just a lot faster than a person can imagine, but when right now when you drive by the front and you see the piles of dirt, and we know that there's going to be a lot of installation of, I won't call it artwork, but it is artwork in the front. When is that going to start?
Yeah, so the there's a plaza out front and a water feature, and so the plan is to get the footings in and then do all the paving, all the concrete paving, and then do the asphalt paving. So there will still be a fence up right around the plaza that staff can get into the building, and the contractor can continue to do that more detailed work after we start moving staff in. all that will be done before the grand opening. Okay. It's a very, there's a lot of moving parts to our turnover and movement, but we've got a good plan and a lot of people working really hard at it.
And there will be people on, employees on this campus and different parts of the organization that will be here all the way through the end of this year. So,
do I dare ask the big question?
When are you moving?
Yeah.
December 31.
So every presentation that we do on moving comes down to that. When am I moving? Yeah, commissioners and senior team will move at the end of September so we can get ready for the first board meeting in October.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. Any other questions? Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Resolution 14.
Agenda item 14 is a resolution authorizing loans from the distribution system to the financing facility system in an amount not to exceed $70 million and from the financing facility system to the Rock Island system in an amount not to exceed $75 million and to the Rocky Reach system in an amount not to exceed $20 million to finance certain Rock Island and Rocky Reach capital improvements for 2023 and 2024. With us is Heather Ireland, and Heather presented this at the last board meeting and is asking for approval today.
Yeah, thank you, Kirk. I do not envy you having to read all of those resolution titles. As Kirk mentioned, this is a resolution request to authorize various internal loans between our district accounting systems. The purpose is to leverage funds available in our distribution system to move them through those accounting systems to ultimately be able to help support our continued investment in our hydro assets at the Rocky Reach and Rock Island system. If approved, these loans would become effective on March 31st, and we would set the interest rates on that date. Are there any questions I can answer?
Questions, commissioners? Gary.
I have two things. One, I want to say welcome twice in one day. We're very fortunate to have you in front of us. But you hit the question I would have had, is when are the interest rates set? So thank you very much. Appreciate that. I think you're just getting to know me a little bit better, the kind of questions I'm going to ask. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Heather.
Okay. I'll invite Ron Slabaugh up. Agenda item number 15 is a resolution approving a fourth addendum to temporary water right mitigation agreement between the regional water system members and Crown Columbia Water Resources, LLC. Ron?
Thank you, Kirk. Good afternoon, commissioners. Just a continuation is here a month ago and described overall that the third addendum that was approved last year, Ecology was not willing to move forward with those particular terms, but Regional's attorney, Pete Fraley, and Crown's folks found an alternative to that with Ecology, and that's envisioned in this fourth addendum. The big part of it is that it changes from a seasonal change application to a temporary change application. That's just the Ecology process. But also will just terminate this agreement at the end of the 2024 irrigation season. Unless the parties agree otherwise. The one thing that has changed since I described this last time is the agreement included some language where the parties would work together on what was called a water budget neutral process with Ecology, and that was just taken out, so it isn't a requirement of the agreement. May or may not elect to go forward with that. So with this, Crown will have used this water for a 4 years, 2020 through 2024. As I mentioned, this temporary agreement will terminate at the end of the irrigation season.
Yes.
At the meeting that we attended about a month or so ago, it was brought up about maybe a different price negotiated for this next round. Has there been any movement on that or discussion based on the cost of the water?
There was some discussion based on that, and Crown pushed back, and they weren't willing to move forward with that. They stated that the amount that they pay for regional water is the highest amount in their portfolio. But we had asked for another $50,000, I believe, and they weren't willing to pay that at this time. For what it's worth, there is an escalation provision that carries forward from the original temporary agreement, where for each year that the water has been in play, it's a little bit over 2% escalation that regional has received. So that was contemplated in the original agreement, and that would have escalated through 2032, except for with recent developments, parties agreed that it's in best interest just to terminate the agreement in 2024.
So they even pushed back on the percentage of escalation? Have you negotiated that at all? Or?
No, the payment schedule that was set forth in the original agreement stands, and that includes that escalation.
But we haven't revisited that.
We have not revisited okay. that. The only thing that's really changed in this whole process is that Ecology wouldn't approve the seasonal change application, and we had to move forward with this temporary change application. Other than that, you know, the use of the water remains the same. The amount of water that's being used remains the same.
So you're saying that the value of of this water hasn't changed in the time that we wrote the original agreement?
We don't have anybody else knocking down our door for that water. And when there was twice, once before Crown used, there's been two times where they have been required per the original agreement to go out and advertise that this water is available. It was something that the previous board wanted to make sure that every opportunity was made available to folks locally to utilize that water. Mm-hmm. So there's advertised in the local newspaper, and we haven't had any takers to date. It could change in the future. When we entered into this agreement with Crown that we felt was very positive for regional is that it utilized the entire consumptive portion of the water right and a little bit of the non-consumptive portion. Mm-hmm. So all the costs associated and the effort associated with processing that were taken care of just with one other party versus trying to go out and monetize just small portions of it.
No, I do appreciate the fact that you did look at it and you know, kind of as you go through these, this is an opportunity to revisit those kinds of conditions of the agreement. So I appreciate that you spent the time doing that. Thank you.
Yep, thanks.
Okay, any other questions for Ron? Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
Okay, agenda item number 16. I'd like to invite Marcy and I guess Marcy. No, and a resolution authorizing the general manager to execute a mitigation water supply agreement with Oroville Tenasket Irrigation District. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Kirk. Good afternoon again. Yes, so this resolution is to enter into the negotiated agreement with OTID. And under that agreement, that will be the 4,000 acre feet of water per year for mitigation rights for the district for irrigation purposes. And the cost of that is $250 per acre foot, which will adjust annually after an initial 10-year period for inflation based on the consumer price index for the Seattle, Tacoma, Bellevue, Washington area. And the term of the agreement is perpetual. The district retains the right to cancel all or part of the mitigation rights in its discretion. And OTID can terminate only for the district's breach if a governmental agency prevents its performance. Those are the pretty much the details of the agreement. There's more there also. But
I just have to say this is a huge step for us looking well into our future and protecting our future. And thank you for all the hard work that you've done on this over the last many, many months.
Thank you. Thank
you. And once again, we're going to miss you.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner McKenna will be joining us very shortly, but right now we have resolutions 11, 12, 14, 15, and 16 that we've had presentations. Is there a motion to approve?
I would propose such a motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the aforementioned resolutions. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried.
Aye. Ah.
Sure. No, you're not opposed, Steve. We're not there yet.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I think Commissioner McKenna is on the phone. Is that correct?
Can you hear me?
We can. We can hear you. Can you hear us?
I'm there.
You can hear us?
I can.
Good. Well, we are ready to continue with resolution number 17.
Agenda item 17 is a resolution authorizing the general manager to execute a land exchange agreement with the city of Wenatchee for the Confluence Parkway project. And before we dive into this, I was going to have Justin just give us all an update on any public comments we've received since the last meeting.
All right. Thank you, Kirk. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director for District Services. We have not received any written comment, or I guess more correct, I should say, I have not received any written comments from the public, nor have staff that I'm aware of. All right. So 2 weeks ago, Eric and I had the pleasure of presenting on Confluence Parkway, bringing you an update on where we're at with process and we went into the specific parameters of the land exchange agreement. You also took public comment at that time. There were six speakers, and then there was one letter that was read into the record as well. And shortly after that meeting, actually the same day, I believe later that afternoon, both the presentation from that morning and the land exchange agreement were posted on the PUD website so that they were also available for public review. As I just mentioned, no written comments have been received to date. And so today in your packet is a resolution which, if approved, would authorize the general manager to sign the land exchange agreement. Should note that there have been no substantive changes to the land exchange agreement. I think there may have been a very minor corrections with some clarity or typos, etc. But by and large, what you saw before is what you have today in your packet and per the resolution. As noted on March 6th, the staff recommendation is to approve the resolution. And in terms of process, the Wenatchee City Council will consider the agreement this Thursday, March 23rd. I would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions, Commissioner?
Commissioners, Eric, maybe I just confirm no substantive changes have been made to the agreement since it was presented and posted.
Justin, before the commissioners ask questions, I understand the city is on their way to attend. Is there anything that we should be aware of in terms of do they want to hear the discussion or make a comment? Or?
You know, I think they were aware of the travel issue that we have with Commissioner McKenna, so they were anticipating a slightly later consideration. So, no, they were just simply wanted to be present and answer any questions that you may have of them as well. So I know Mayor Koontz is coming and should be here momentarily.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we could take a brief pause if, in deference to the city, if that is the desire of the commission, but that's entirely up to the commission, not the purview of the president. So.
Well, I think we should take a pause and allow people that want to be here. You know, we are ahead of schedule, so I would think if they're expecting to be here, then we should at least make some allowances.
Okay. Is that...
That works for me.
Yeah.
All right.
That's appropriate.
Okay.
Too.
Well...
Just about 10 minutes, sir. I believe they'll be here.
Okay. And you have... do we have any questions for Justin at this point?
I just right off the cuff here, I just want to thank Justin for the time you've spent with me explaining the details and going over all the facts, and I appreciate that, and it's helped me understand what the issue is that we're dealing with right here. And so I'm kind of coming in here late, you know, off the bench. But anyway, I appreciate the time that you've spent, and you've done a good job doing it. Thank you.
So do I interpret that as he's boiled it down to a simple, straightforward proposal? Is that right?
Well, you know me.
You fought the lawyers.
Generally how I break it down, Randy.
I appreciate that, Commissioner.
And I would echo that as well. Same for many of you.
I appreciate all your time and patience. I know this has been a couple of, a significant number of months and deliberations and information that you've rightfully asked for and that we've tried to hopefully meet. And so thank you all for going on this journey with us.
You call it a journey, I call it a windy road. The mayor is in the hallway, and I'm not certain what you and Eric are talking about right now, but
probably say the mayor has entered the building.
Yeah.
Where's the security guards?
Yeah. And the security guards even let him in.
I know. Let anybody in. Are you going around the?
Yeah, it's
yeah.
Pretty friendly.
Right here. So I rub your back.
Welcome, Mayor Coon. Justin just went through a presentation on our Resolution 17 regarding the Confluence Parkway. We understood you. You may want to have some comment. We've asked no questions of Justin whatsoever at this point. And
yeah, we don't have anything to add. I think we've been working with you guys. I think the contract's as good as it's going to get. So I think we're prepared to take the contract that the attorneys have agreed upon and take it to our city council on Thursday. So we don't have any questions at this point.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Commissioners, we have our last major item on the agenda is Resolution 17. Before we start discussing it, we need obviously a motion and a second. And we've talked about this for Gary and Steve and my thought process a long time. And this conversation could be quick, and it could be a conversation. But first, we need to start with a motion and a second, and I'll just try to act as a facilitator.
Well, I'll step up and move that we approve Resolution 17 as it has been committed.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Confluence Parkway Resolution number 17. Is there any discussion?
Okay, I think that it needs to be clear and understood that this vote is not an approval or disapproval of the parkway. This vote that we're taking today is a land exchange only and does not signify any support one way or the other. We're making a land exchange that's going to improve the Haran habitat area is the way I see it, and I hope that is understood with everyone in the community. Now, whether they move forward or not with the road will be up to the City of Wenatchee and the Department of Transportation. So that's how I view this vote.
Any other input?
This is Steve. Whenever it's my turn, you, Randy,
go, like go for it. Go for it, Steve.
So... thank you for your patience. And I just jumped off of a plane and I thought I heard you call for the vote. I'm ready to jump in and give my support, but I'd like to talk a little bit about, I'd like to take just a couple of minutes and talk about this project. In the 6 years that I've been at the PUD, this is the most complicated project that I've been involved with. It has had the most input from our customer owners of anything that I've been involved with. And, you know, those that input is, of course you'll do it, and of course you wouldn't do this. And so which puts us in a interesting position of trying to negotiate and mitigate and work really hard to try to answer to our best ability what our customer owners are asking for and what they're saying. For an entire year, we as a commission have studied this at almost every single meeting that we've had. That discussion then guided our staff to negotiate the agreement that's before us today with mitigations that were of concern to us. And again, many thanks to the hard work of city staff, the mayor, PUD staff. Just a great effort has gone into this. But there is high expectations in this agreement for those agreements, the mitigations. And for me, those, once we've signed this, you know, in my mind, we are moving forward. This is the first step with moving forward with the confluence. This is the big step. And these agreements are non-negotiable. We're not going to come back in a few years and say, or a few months and say, hey, we just can't do this. This agreement behooves the city and the PUD to get them accomplished, and that includes us as a PUD. You know, I don't want to walk back on this agreement in any way. It is the agreement, and this is the standard. It's our paramount duty as a PUD and a city to follow through what this agreement is, because it's based on what our customer owners have said is important. And if we have to walk back on this, I'm not going to be supportive, and I'll work to unwind it if we can't accomplish what we've said we're going to accomplish. So I'm really supportive of this agreement. We've worked really hard to get here. And I only have one caution that I would like to pass on to the city, is that we keep working on the next phase of, or that the city keeps working on the next phase. This Confluence Parkway is a step in the right direction. It's not an end-all answer. Everyone knows that. It will help. But we need to keep working on that growth and those next steps, even if most of us won't be here. Different mayors, different PUD managers, different highway folks. We all need to keep working on this in the future. So I'm supportive of this, and I appreciate everybody's hard work. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Steve. Any other input?
I have something I want to say, and got a few prepared comments. And first of all, I want to thank staff. This has been a long journey. We've been working on this with the city what seems like ever. Matter of fact, it's so long that some of the staff have retired who started off on this project. There's been an awful lot of time. There's been a lot of effort and a lot of resources that have been consumed, both at the city, I'm sure, but at the district as well, to get us to where we are today. This Confluence Parkway resolution provides value to our customer owners. It's assuring them that this proposed new land swap, which is embedded in the agreement and the resolution, which is currently in private ownership within the Horan wetlands, once transferred, will forever be part of an undeveloped, natural, serene, and provide home for abundant wildlife. But I'd also like to honor those customer owners that have communicated with me, sharing opinions both for and against,
And try as I will, I have to say they're equally weighed. So today's resolution puts in play a roadmap to achieve equity, taking something of value and replacing it with equal value, otherwise known as a compromise. Evidence of the district's desire and its commitment to partner with the city by helping alleviate traffic congestion in the North End is the cornerstone of this decision that we are about to make. However, it's not an easy decision to allow highway traffic to run through the Horan wetlands, and indeed, almost half of the comments I've received have been strongly against it. To those against the project, let me say that this proposed land swap resolution will add new land within the wetlands that is currently in private hands and at risk of development. I must admit that I was initially negative on the idea of allowing a parkway to cut through the Horan area. However, this land swap resolution is an artful compromise that will both help alleviate traffic congestion and also secure and expand interior lands within the wetland. Goodwill and honest negotiations have brought us to this decision today. Without trust between the district and the city, I'm certain that this resolution would not be here today. I want to say thank you to the mayor, Mayor Coons, and for your willingness to hear our customer owners' concerns and build an agreement and agree to terms that are acceptable to all. Thank you.
Any other commissioner input? Hearing none, we have a motion and a second on the floor. I will call for the vote. All those in favor of resolution number 17, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carries unanimously. All right.
Thank you for your hard work.
Okay. Commission items, rate 36 implementation. Is there a presentation on that?
It's me.
It's Eric.
I know you've been waiting with bated breath. Commissioners, first of all, my apologies. This should have been to you maybe a month or so ago. We've been busy at work on a number of issues, but one of the things that we were tasked with, I'm going to say late last summer, was to re-examine the rate 35 and 36 approach that we had relative to cryptocurrency, other types of mining activities, and data processors. You'll recall even our new commissioners were present at some of those conversations that we had with some of our customers. So I will just let you know by way of a foreshadowing that the team has been very hard at work on this, and I really appreciate the creative thinking. We do have a construct in mind. That construct has been vetted, at least initially, by the senior management team, including Kirk, and our hope is to come back and begin to introduce that concept and those proposed revisions to you in the May board meeting cycle. I don't know immediately whether that's the first or second meeting of May, but of course we'll have at least an introductory meeting where we will also establish our customer outreach, the air quotes purple resolution that sets our outreach. And so we would, at the same time as we introduce the concept, propose to you an outreach process for your consideration. And if you approve, we would begin that walk. Along that path also includes a revised staff report and the supporting information and analysis that will help you make a decision as that comes to you for consideration. And then, of course, after the decision, there will need to be some implementation into the billing cycle, the testing, making sure that customers get appropriate bills based upon the new rate model once it's rolled out. And then finally, it will establish a go-live date for that new rate. All of that to say, it's coming, but it's not here yet. We currently have, when we took our pause to do this work in early
fall, late summer of last year. I'm going to say we postponed the market energy piece adjustment at the time that would have come into play, and we held status quo. We only continued that until April 1 of this year. So we're here, and the motion is prepared asking for your support for a delay in that so that we can maintain the status quo until we're able to come to you in the May and probably June timeframe, explain to you the construct we're contemplating, be able to address any questions or concerns that you have, and then ultimately with an eye toward adoption of a new rate and a setting of a new effective date for that rate. But we need some time to get there. Any delay is my responsibility. Suffice it to say, there's a lot of hard work going on, and we just ask for your support for this. There is not magic you will see in the motion. There's an August 1 date. To be very frank, it carried originally a June 1 date. That made the team nervous given the work they're doing. We could not, under any construct, have the whole thing done and tested and ready to implement by June 1, or frankly, maybe even August 1, because of the testing work that needs to be done, and that's all dependent upon your decision. So it's really a placeholder that needs to be out far enough that it will allow time to get to you to roll out the construct for you to make a decision, give us the new construct, give us the new date, and then that date will fall away. So it's really about just making sure it's not too soon that I'm not back asking for more, and not so far away that we all forget that it's coming. So that is the purpose for the motion that is in front of you. And if you're so inclined, we would appreciate that support. Thanks. Happy to answer any questions at all.
Questions, commissioners? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion that is before you. Somebody could present.
I'd like to propose a motion to further defer the annual adjustments of the rate Schedule 36 market energy charge to August 1, 2023, in order to allow time to complete the consideration and potential modification of rate Schedule 36.
Is there a second?
I second.
It's been moved and seconded to further defer the annual adjustment of rate Schedule 36. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you all, commissioners.
You bet. Any other commissioner items today? Did we all have a good WAPUTA meeting last week?
That was a good meeting. I also went to a meeting at the INIAT Museum. And so they are going to be opening on May 27th. They've got all their volunteers showing up. But one thing that they have made an ask for, not of the PUD specifically, but as a whole, is for pictures of local fires, you know, any fires. And I don't know if we might have any pictures somewhere in our artifacts somewhere. But it might be fun to be able to contribute them to their interpretive center. I also found it pretty fascinating to be there with individuals who had gone to high school before the dam was removed and get to talk to them about life after, you know, their home now is at the bottom of the river. And I've driven through INIAT a lot and have gone to the log cabin, but to sit there in that capacity and really reflect on the history of INIAT was pretty touching. So I feel that as a PUD, if we could pull up some relics to help our museum, it's the least we could do.
Well, and that museum does happen to sit on PUD property.
In a PUD house.
It is, yeah.
But what I also find interesting is in their little brochure here, it says that the old house is packed with items from residents representing daily lives and activities of those living in the INIAT area in the past, from pioneering days through the Great Depression and into the 60s, when the Rocky Reach Dam erased the existing town and all it represented. And as I look at this, there's really not much of the dam or the PUD in the museum. So the history, in my mind, continues. Yeah. And perhaps there's a way for us to connect a little more with this museum.
Yeah. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught Justin shaking his head. So that's You got his attention, and that's the right person right
now. Oh, good, Justin. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up, not really relevant to PUD, but just north of Rocky Reach, there has been more and more rock fall. In fact, one of my clients, their vehicle was totaled for a rock hitting the top of their car. And as I was driving the road today, I noticed recent fall as well. So I'm making a note to take the Douglas County Road home, you know, the other side of the river, and I'm not sure how often our crews are going up, you know, past Rocky Reach, but it's something that we might be wanting to take consideration on. It takes about 5 minutes longer to go the other route. Just putting it out there. This isn't my first client who's had a total vehicle due to rock fall, and it seems to be pretty prevalent right now. So FYI. And lastly, I want to thank Kirk and the team that invited me to go to the Yakima Nation. That was such an amazing experience for me. As you all know, I'm green. I'm learning everything new without a doubt. But to be there hearing the story of the tribe and them explaining their enterprises, it was just a very meaningful experience for me. And so thank you so much for including me. Sorry for you, Randy and Steve, but I feel like I got a win that day.
I think you did. I know I didn't.
But thank you.
You bet. Any other commissioner items? Carnan.
Just one note. I was gone on a kind of a couple-week vacation down in Arizona, motorcycle ride with some friends, and I can't remember exactly where it was because when you're riding a motorcycle, your head gets clear and you don't know where you are sometimes. But anyway, we went through several valleys, and the solar projects down there are just huge. And they're building out more and more and more. I mean, we could drive 10 miles and we go by a solar project, and it's extensive. It's big. And they're clearing more land all the time in several locations. So the solar industry is alive and well, and I can visualize those projects taking up the entire valleys of some of these areas. And it's here to stay, folks, and it's going to be an impact, and I'm not sure how that affects us up here, but it's just, I mean, I had to walk, I was impressed. I mean, this is big stuff, and there's a lot of money behind it. So, that's all. Yes.
Any others? Steve, Gary? Don't know if Steve spoke.
Not for me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Nothing for me.
Okay. No other commission items? Is there a follow-up on delegation of any action items?
No new updates from prior board meetings. And for this meeting, I did not capture any.
Then we're not going on tour of
Rock Island tour. didn't let me finish. We will make sure you get an invite.
It's probably already finished.
Yeah, probably you might have it on your calendar already.
Okay.
I believe Steve and I are on the 28th. Steve, are you going with me to Rock Island? Isn't he on that?
I believe so.
And we would probably want to give you another invite because it sounds like when you're going to go, it's going to be before you get to see the big stuff that John was talking about. So I would encourage you to go to both because there's a lot going on there.
I had the good fortune of having a tour back in February, two tours, because as Kirk said, a lot going on, huge operation. So I would encourage you to wear comfortable shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Duly noted.
All right.
But closed toed, hard leather.
And a hat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Closed toed.
Yep. We'll get you
set up.
Okay. And that was it on the delegation. Is there any additional public comment? Mayor? Okay. You had your chance. Remember that. Okay. Any other matters of general business as may necessarily come before the commission? Hearing none. Commissioner McKenna, we met in executive session this morning, and I imagine staff will fill you in at the appropriate time.
Yep.
And oh, perfect. Thank you.
You bet. And so that being said, if there's no other business to come before us, we will adjourn.